This is Ann Weller from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be sharing nutrition information with you. This information is selected from the Nutrition Action Health Letter, a publication of the Center for Science in the Public Interest, based in Washington, D.C. The Center for Science in the Public Interest was founded in 1971 by three scientists who wanted to apply their academic training to the solving of social problems. It conducts innovative research and programs in health and nutrition and provides consumers with current information about their health and well-being. An independent, nonprofit consumer health group, the Center for Science in the Public Interest promotes honest food labeling and advertising, safer and more nutritious foods, and pro-health alcohol policies. The Center's work is supported by Nutrition Action Health Letter subscribers and by foundation grants. It accepts no government or industry funding, and Nutrition Action Health Letter, which was first published in 1974, accepts no advertising. The following edition of Nutrition News is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Please use the information presented in this broadcast in consultation with your personal physician. Today's broadcast focuses on the cover story of the April 2010 issue of Nutrition Action Health Letter. The report, entitled Shaving Salt, Saving Lives, is authored by Bonnie Liebman, Director of Nutrition for Nutrition Action Health Letter. In 2005, high blood pressure was responsible for 1 in 6 deaths in the United States, says a new report from experts at the Institute of Medicine. That's because hypertension boosts your risk of dying of a heart attack or stroke more than smoking, high cholesterol, obesity, or any other risk factor does. And excess salt is a major cause of high blood pressure. What's more, salt may damage the heart, the kidneys, and other organs above and beyond its effect on blood pressure. Salt is causing us too many lives and too many dollars, says physician Stephen Havas. Here's why you, and more importantly, the food industry, should hold the salt. It's no surprise that cutting salt lowers blood pressure. That has been shown in studies that compare higher versus lower salt diets in both adults and children. In a recent meta-analysis of 13 studies, found not just lower blood pressures, but a lower risk of heart attacks, strokes, and other cardiovascular events among people who cut their salt intake. For example, in the trials of hypertension prevention studies, some 2,400 people with pre-hypertension were randomly assigned to either cut their sodium by roughly 750 to 1,000 milligrams a day, or to follow general guidelines for healthy eating for 1.5 to 4 years. 10 to 15 years after the studies ended, researchers found a 25 to 30% lower risk of heart attacks, strokes, or other cardiovascular events in the group that cut their salt intake. A decrease in sodium in the diet, even among those with only modestly elevated blood pressure, lowers risk of cardiovascular disease later in life, says investigator Nancy Cook, an associate professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School. Well, why worry about salt if you have not been diagnosed with high blood pressure? Odds are you will be diagnosed with high blood pressure. Over time, 90% of people in this country develop hypertension, says Dr. Havas. He's a former vice president of science, quality, and public health at the American Medical Association. That's because unless you live in a society where people eat very little salt, blood pressure rises as you age. In the atherosclerosis risk and community study, which followed more than 15,000 Americans between the ages of 45 and 64, average systolic blood pressure, that's the upper number in your blood pressure ratio, jumped 5 points in 5 years. Blood pressures drift upward as people get older and they are exposed to long-term excess sodium, explains Dr. Havas. That's why almost all adults are going to get blood pressures that put them at higher risk for heart disease and stroke. Doctors consider prescribing drugs when your blood pressure is high. That is, when it is at least 140 over 90. But it's a threat to your blood vessels even before it crosses that line. People do not realize that blood pressure higher than 120 over 80 is associated with increased risk, says Dr. Havas. Between normal and hypertension, you have a huge number of heart disease and stroke deaths attributable to excess blood pressure, he explains. The National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute calls those in-between blood pressures pre-hypertension. Roughly one out of three American adults has pre-hypertension, and another one out of three adults has hypertension. Researchers are not sure how elevated blood pressure raises the risk of heart attacks and strokes. One possibility is that it may accelerate the clogging of arteries. The progression of atherosclerosis is much higher in the face of hypertension, explains hypertension authority Norman Kaplan of the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. The heart beating at a higher pressure may lead to damage in the blood vessel wall, and that could allow cholesterol and inflammatory cells to enter. High blood pressure doesn't just raise the risk of heart attacks and strokes. It also boosts the risk of heart failure, which affects 5.8 million Americans. It can mean that the heart's pump has deteriorated and cannot push the blood out, says Dr. Kaplan, author of Kaplan's Clinical Hypertension, a reference for physicians. And high blood pressure is a leading cause of chronic kidney disease, which strikes one out of nine Americans. Also troubling is the growing evidence that hypertension raises the risk of dementia. For example, in the Women's Health Initiative Memory Study, which took MRI brain scans of 1,400 women over the age of 65, those with high blood pressure had more abnormal brain lesions 8 years later. Even moderately elevated blood pressure is associated with silent vascular disease in the brain that contributes to risk of dementia, conclude the study's authors. So what if you get high blood pressure? Can't you just take a drug to lower it? Well, you don't want to wait until your blood pressure crosses that magic threshold of 140 over 90, because by that point, you've already done a fair amount of damage to your heart, your vascular system, your kidneys, and your brain, says Dr. Havas. What is more, 42 million Americans have uncontrolled hypertension. That's because 28% of those who have hypertension don't know it, 11% know that they have it, but they're not being treated. And 26% are being treated, but not enough to get their blood pressure below 140 over 90. That means 65% of Americans with hypertension do not have their blood pressure under control. Why? Hypertension is a chronic condition that does not make the patient feel anything, explains Dr. Kaplan. If people with, say, rheumatoid arthritis don't take their medication, they hurt. So they'll take that medication. But people with hypertension do not experience anything obvious, so they stop their medication. A number of surveys have shown that if you put 100 people on treatment, in a year's time, only half of them will still be taking their medication, Dr. Kaplan notes. Doctors may also share some of the blame. Some physicians will put their patients on antihypertensive medication and then say, okay, I'm done, without monitoring to see if the patient's blood pressure is still elevated, says Kaplan. But eating less salt would make blood pressure drugs more effective in those who need them. With lower sodium intakes, you see a greater fall in blood pressure, says Dr. Kaplan, and that is particularly true for the diuretics, but it has been shown with other drugs as well. In fact, researchers recently tested the impact of a lower salt diet on 12 people who had resistant hypertension. That is, their blood pressures were still high, even though they were taking an average of 3.5 different drugs to reduce it every day. When doctors told them to not just take the drugs, but to also eat a lower salt diet, that is about 1,050 milligrams of salt a day, their blood pressures were dramatically lower by an average of 22 over 9 points than when they were on a high salt diet, which is equivalent to 5,750 milligrams of salt a day. The author's conclusion: high dietary salt ingestion is an important cause of resistant hypertension. For certain individuals who are salt sensitive, excessive consumption of sodium can increase the blood pressure, says the Salt Institute, which represents the salt industry. What do they mean by certain individuals? Some people react to sodium more quickly than others, says Dr. Havas. But 90% of people in this country develop hypertension, and the principal cause is exposure to excess sodium. So most people over time do not do well with high salt loads. What's more, there is no predictor or test of salt sensitivity, he adds. So one has to assume that almost all of us are sensitive to long-term sodium exposure. That is why expert panels recommend no more than 1,500 milligrams of sodium a day if you are middle-aged or older or black or already have high blood pressure. Everyone else should shoot for 2,300 milligrams a day. But everyone else turns out to be just 30% of U.S. adults. Cutting excess salt is not the only way to lower blood pressure. Getting more potassium also helps. And Americans average far less than the 4,700 milligrams of potassium daily target. Eating a DASH diet, which is rich in fruits, vegetables, and low-fat dairy foods, knocks down blood pressure And so does staying trim, daily exercise, and limiting alcohol to no more than 2 drinks a day for men or 1 drink a day for women. All of those factors affect blood pressure, says Dr. Havas. I don't think anyone would argue that you should only work on one front, but cutting salt is still key. Sometimes, he adds, other factors are a smokescreen that the food industry throws out to confuse everybody. In fact, it may be easier to change the population's salt intake than anything else. We cannot get people to lose weight and maintain weight loss over time, though we should try, because some people do it, notes Dr. Havas. We cannot get people to exercise regularly and maintain it over time, though it's worth trying because some people will do it. And it's not easy to get people to eat more fruits and vegetables. Consumption of fruits and vegetables has been going up very gradually, says Dr. Havas. If the average American eats 3 or 4 servings a day, and we need to get 8 or 9 or more, it's going to take a long time. In contrast, the government can stop companies from dumping so much salt into packaged and restaurant foods. Getting sodium out of the food supply is the easiest because you can engineer that, explains Dr. Havas. You cannot engineer more fruits and vegetables, greater weight loss, and more exercise. Salt appears to damage the heart and blood vessels above and beyond its impact on blood pressure. With most animals, if you give them a high intake of salt, their blood pressure will go up. They will develop cardiovascular disease, and they will die prematurely, explains researcher Norm Campbell of the University of Calgary in Canada. But if you genetically breed animals so you can feed them salt and they have no increase in blood pressure, they still develop cardiovascular disease prematurely. And that suggests that salt has direct toxic effects on the heart and the blood vessels. And there is evidence that salt is toxic to humans. By and large, these human studies show increased cardiovascular event rates on typical high-salt diets, independent of blood pressure, notes Dr. Campbell. How might salt harm the body beyond its impact on blood pressure? High blood pressure can thicken the muscle in the chamber of the heart that pumps blood throughout the body. The presence of left ventricular thickness is a very high-risk situation because it contributes to most cases of heart failure, explains Dr. Kaplan. But some studies suggest that a high-salt diet worsens the damage caused by high blood pressure, and cutting back on salt may reverse the muscle thickening, he adds. Stiff arteries are often an early sign of heart disease. When researchers put overweight or obese people with normal blood pressure on a diet with a typical sodium intake, that is about 3,500 milligrams a day, their arteries were stiffer than when they ate a low-salt diet, that is about 1,150 milligrams a day. These findings suggest additional cardioprotective effects of salt reduction beyond blood pressure reduction, conclude the researchers. And high blood pressure damages the kidneys, but salt may make it worse. In some studies, people who consume more salt excrete more protein in their urine, and that's a sign that their kidneys are under stress. The presence of protein in the filtering surfaces of the kidneys is associated with inflammation and damage, notes Dr. Kaplan. And for people who have kidney disease, a reduction in sodium can reduce protein in the urine. High-salt diets increase calcium losses in urine. When there's excess salt in the kidney's tubules, it draws out the calcium, explains Dr. Kaplan. But only a few studies have looked at salt's impact on bone. So stay tuned. The average American woman consumes roughly 3,000 milligrams of sodium a day. The average American man consumes more than 4,000 milligrams of sodium a day. What would we say by cutting those intakes by 1,200 milligrams per day? That's what the University of California's Kirsten Bivens Domingo and colleagues estimated. We modeled small reductions in salt across the whole United States population, not getting everyone to recommended levels, but to eat just slightly less salt, she explains. Recommended levels are less than 1,500 milligrams a day for most people. And we found that lowering salt would result in many fewer heart attacks, many fewer strokes, new cases of heart disease, and fewer deaths each year. Even small changes in blood pressure across the whole population would have very dramatic health benefits. Cutting salt by 1,200 milligrams a day would save more lives than lowering the body weight of all obese people by 5%, which is difficult to achieve and maintain, notes Dr. Bivens Domingo. Trimming salt would save about as many lives, heart attacks, and strokes as treating everybody who's already hypertensive with blood pressure medications. Cutting salt would also cut costs because of money not spent on hospitalizations for heart attacks and strokes, notes Dr. Bivens Domingo. We would save lives and health care costs. And the true savings may be even greater. If salt raises the risk of heart attacks and strokes above and beyond its effect on blood pressure, it could have a gigantic impact, says Dr. Havas. So it's a double whammy. I'm a physician, says Dr. Bivens Domingo, and it's always striking to me how hard it is for my patients to cut salt. That's because 75 to 80% of the sodium we consume is added to food before we open a package or walk into a restaurant. So unless you make everything, including breads, crackers, cereals, soup, pizza, spaghetti sauce, salad dressing, unless you make everything from scratch, you cannot easily avoid the salt. You can take all the salty snacks out of your diet, the nuts and the chips and everything else, but much still remains, says Dr. Bivens Domingo. So many patients come to me thinking they've made healthier choices, and they're oftentimes consuming the same, if not more, salt. And restaurants make supermarket salt levels look low. People eat more and more in restaurants, says Dr. Havas. And they have no idea how much sodium is in those foods. Like the governments of the United Kingdom and Finland, Washington could pressure and, if necessary, require companies to cut salt and could require warning labels on high-salt foods. The food industry is not going to trim salt on its own, says Dr. Havas. It's been 8 years since the American Public Health Association called on food companies and restaurants to cut sodium levels in half. And if they had, we could have saved 150,000 lives a year. And that's at least 1.2 million lives since 2002. We cannot just keep saying, let's try a voluntary approach. Too many people are dying or becoming disabled. As long as the food supply stays salt-laden, the easiest way to reach target sodium levels is to make your own food. Okay, it's not easy to bake your own raisin bran, but you can easily whip up your own salad dressing and season your own rice, couscous, or pasta. You can also buy no-salt-added canned beans. Try Eden. No-salt-added canned tuna. Try Bumblebee. And no-salt-added canned tomatoes. Try Pommy. But on days when there's no way you're going to make your own, try this. Add salt-free vegetables, beans, or grains to high-sodium packaged or restaurant foods. You not only cut the salt in each serving, you boost the potassium. What's more, you save money by stretching costlier packaged foods or restaurant takeout. It's a win-win situation. For example, you could add 1 pound of steamed broccoli to a takeout order of Kung Pao chicken. Or add steamed or sautéed veggies to any takeout Chinese dish with a Szechuan, Hunan, garlic, black bean, or other strong flavored sauce. Or you could add 1 cup of bulgur, that is parboiled whole wheat. Add any quick cooking brown rice or whole wheat couscous or orzo. And add whole grain pasta to any seasoned pasta dish. Or you could add 1 pound of asparagus and 1 pint of grape tomatoes. Add fresh or frozen vegetables to any dish. Most packaged foods have very few veggies. Or you could add 1 can of unsalted canned kidney beans, drained and rinsed. Add unsalted cooked or canned beans, lentils, red lentils cook quickly, or frozen peas to any curry. Well, folks, we've reached the conclusion of this month's segment of Nutrition News. Please join me at the same time next month. I hope that you've enjoyed the show. I'm Ann Weller, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. This program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and it is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long till next month.